You're listening to the Black British Parent Podcast, having conversations, sharing experiences, and supporting the Black British Parent community with your host, Deborah Field Pelly.
And we have an amazing guest with us today. Her name is Bianca Johnson, and Bianca does some amazing work in our communities with advocacy for teen parents, teen mums from, I guess, Black and brown communities. Now, when I say advocacy, we're not talking about promoting and encouraging teen parents and teen pregnancy, etc. What we're saying is that those who happen to be in that situation or circumstance where they're expecting or are parents, they need support too. So, Bianca, thank you so much for joining me on this episode and accepting our invitation. Tell us a little bit about yourself and some of the work that you do, please.
Okay, so I am Bianca. I am founder of Bianca I Do Advocacy. I support by educating and empowering young teen mothers from ages 12 to 21 in the community. That's what I do, and I am currently delivering workshops, online workshops, which are free for teen mothers to help empower and educate. So the work that I do, it's surrounded by five pillars. So we look at workshops surrounding maternity, education, mental well-being, housing and finance. And why has all of this come around? Why am I doing the work that I'm doing? Why am I, you know, in this niche field? Why am I not working with just all mothers? Why am I working with, you know, teen mothers, young mothers? So there is a lot of stigma around teenage pregnancy. And what I noticed is there's even more stigma if you are from the Black and brown community. And that's what, you know, kind of allowed me to find my space. And I wanted to be able to, I'm not always able to change the stigma in the world, but you can always change the way a person deals with that stigma in the world. And the way this can happen is by education. And once you are educated, you then feel empowered to make better informed decisions. And that's what I did.
That's awesome. I imagine that can be quite daunting work sometimes, especially with young people and where their minds are at, and especially if they aren't getting as much support. And you talked about some of the stigmas that are attached to teen parenthood. Can you give us some examples, please? I think they're quite obvious, but I'd like to hear from you and, you know, how some of these young people feel about these stigmas, if they've ever had conversations with you about it.
So some of the stigmas that a teen mother can adapt is, funny enough, around the five pillars that I speak around. So there'll be a stigma that she'll never finish her education. Education is just not going to be something that she can finish. And some of the women that I do work with, the external people that I work with, such as school nurses and careers advisors, will prove otherwise. That's not true. Financial education. So the stigma is that she's probably never going to be good at either making money or keeping money. So that's a stigma. But we teach about that, and we know for sure that's not just teen mothers. That is anyone. In fact,
isn't that something that is right? I thought grown people have those same issues even after having children. Do you know what I mean? So, or with or without children. Go ahead. Sorry.
Exactly. Anyone that will know, mothers are the number one people when it comes to being able to save and keep money. So we know already that is a myth, that if you are a teen mother, you're not going to be able to make or keep money. Absolutely, you know, everyone has their own opinion, but that is far from the truth. She is going to save, you know, more tighter than the average person, because it's not about her anymore. She's got a baby now. So that's completely, I believe that's the opposite. maternity. So we know that, you know, Black women are a lot more times likely to face adverse behaviour through the hands, unfortunately, of healthcare professionals. So what we do is educate on certain aspects of maternity. Now, I know you can Google this information, but funny enough, not all the information you think somebody, especially a teen mother, would look for. So you wouldn't, a teen mother probably wouldn't always think to think about hyperemesis, which is an aggressive sickness. She wouldn't really think about hypertension. You know, she'll probably be looking at just the basics, just, you know, aches and pains in my stomach. So we do take a deep dive into looking at some very rare complications, which I would even argue that some grown women wouldn't even know about unless you're actually a mother suffering with that. So there is a stigma that as a teen mother, she's not geared up on what's actually happening in her body. This can be very demotivating because she's a mother from when you conceive. It doesn't matter how old you are a mother. So it's quite heartbreaking that we can look at teen mothers as, you know, she's uneducated. She doesn't really know what's going on with her body. I'm sure there's women my age and older that still, you know, won't know what's going on with their body. We get a lot of stigma in terms of, so with mental well-being, we get a lot of stigma in terms of just thinking that a young mum is just not stable to hold and maintain relationships. This is not just romantic relationships, but just relationships with people at school and people at college or even her parents. Yes, there can be a breakdown in relationships with parents because of the nature of the pregnancy with her being so young and stuff like that. But in the world, when you mention you're a teen mother, then you're naturally associated with a family that, a broken family. So we work on a lot of mental well-being in that sense to get them to understand that you have a support system, and sometimes that isn't always family. Your support system is anybody that wants to help. And then with housing, so the stigma is that if you are a young mother, you are going to be placed in a poverty type area. You're probably going to be placed in, you know, social housing, and you're probably going to be on the welfare system. And we're not saying that this doesn't happen, but we're saying that this is more heavily geared towards teen mothers, and that's not always the case. And even if that is the case, when a young mother comes onto the program, we just work through those tools on, you know, just being able to access affordable housing, or even the homeless route, where we're getting teen mothers in temporary accommodation or mother and baby accommodation, how she can just work with the local authority for that. And yes, we do have teen mothers who are quite wealthy. They come from some wealthy families, so they're actually gifted a house. So that stigma, again, is... it's not good to have that kind of stigma. Is it not the truth? It is the truth. There are a lot of young mums in social housing living in those conditions. But I just think it's just, it's not the whole truth.
That's very interesting to hear that, actually, because there is that assumption that teen mums are coming from deprived backgrounds or family circumstances. But to hear that some are coming from wealthy backgrounds and are getting support and assistance, you know, in some ways. What kind of support would you, whether this matters or not, but what kind of support would a family in that circumstance come to you for if they don't need assistance with housing, et cetera, or finances?
So a lot of the work that we do, everything's about mind work, emotional well-being, although we focus on all the other pillars that I just spoke of. But it's more about, and this is exactly why my services exist, because like we just mentioned, she may be from a wealthy family, but to the world, that's irrelevant. That is irrelevant. Unless you are, you know, a young mom and you're a celebrity, you might get a pass. But if you are wealthy, the world doesn't care how much money your parents have got. That stigma of just being a teen mother, it's kind of set in stone. So a young mother may come to me because, yes, she may have the housing aspect sorted, but there may be other areas that she's struggling with. She may even have the education side sorted because mum or dad may give some money for her to then, pursue her educational needs. But you'll find that she's, mum and dad are looking after you, but the world's not looking after you. And this is where my program comes into it, because when mum and dad are looking after you, that's one thing, but that doesn't mean that when you go to bed at night, people are still not looking at you in as a failure. And unfortunately, that's just something that, unfortunately, that just doesn't go away, no matter how much money's there. And going back to what I said at the beginning, everything is just about knowing that we can't help our surroundings, we can't help the stigma. I hope I can at one point, at some point in my life, I'll be able to fight against the stigma to that extent. But I know right now it's just about working with the individual and letting her just get those tools, learning that education, building up that resilience, because, yeah, it's not about you anymore. It is about you and the baby. And definitely navigating this world as a teenage mom, you're going to be coming against fights. And if you don't have the education and the tools to be able to work with what's going to be thrown at you, it can be an even more stressful journey than what you're already going to have as a mother anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned supporting 12 to 21 year olds. 12 is quite young. I mean, I'm being very judgmental just now, but still in my mind I'm thinking with my own children, I couldn't imagine that being the case. So what's that like with supporting people as young as 12, 13, and 13?
So far, with the work that I do, I've only known a few cases of someone being 12 to 13 years old, of being pregnant. But just through my research and just from all the work that I've done, we know that this is happening. So that's why the starting age is 12. Apart from this work that I'm doing, I also promote menstruation education. So I am working with young girls in schools, just promoting education around menstruation. So from that side of things, I am still working with 12-year-olds. But in terms of this work, working with teen mothers, we've only had about two cases where they were 12, 13 and got pregnant. Yeah. It is very young. But does it happen? Yes.
What's the availability for support like for teen mums?
So from myself, how I normally do things is I will put myself out there to everyone and everyone that I believe can help me in order get in terms of getting a woman to come onto the workshops. I first of all explain that it is free, and I will place myself in places such as schools, universities, colleges, libraries, for the space, and just as they're able to engage with the community, outreach centres, domestic abuse centres, prisons are on the radar, but still trying to work on that. Sure Start centres, all the charities that we can think of that are involved with young mothers or have a department that they're working with young mothers. The NHS, midwives, all the organisations that work with the midwives, school nurses, and the last one is local authorities, but only the departments that work with social housing for young people. So yeah,
that's interesting, because you're based in Birmingham. Yeah, you're based in Birmingham, right? Do you do any online work or is it all in person?
So it's actually the opposite. It's actually all online. And I would like it to be in person. And that's another thing that we're working on, is how we can work on getting a space to hold the workshops. We can hold probably a maximum between 6 and 10 teenagers onto the program. And okay. It would be over 4 days, and then they graduate after the 4 days after completing the program, and they'll only ever be with me for 2.5 hours. We never keep a mother longer than that for two reasons: school run or pregnancy.
Yeah,
so they've got no excuse.
But yeah, do you know, it's interesting because I just want to make it clear for anyone listening that as much as you say the workshops for free, it's free for the attendees, but it obviously comes at a cost for the facilitators. So hence why, you know, organizations like Bianca's need as much support as possible, you know, and just to keep people in the know that there's services like this that are available to people in our Black community. Because here's the thing, once we attach the word Black to any organization or any acts of service that we do, it's assumed that it's only Black people that are doing these things, and it's clearly not what it is. Unfortunately, we're in a situation where this kind of thing happens, these situations, circumstances happen in all communities. It's just that it seems that whilst there are services catering to all people in all communities, sometimes the Black and brown or African and Caribbean communities aren't necessarily, they don't necessarily feel as included in those spaces. So hence why the need to create, you know, spaces for people of Black and, that are Black and brown or of the African diaspora or African Caribbean to, or just African, you know, because there's so many different titles for our people. But yes, all people of from our community to be able to feel comfortable in a space and not be judged on the colour of their skin and be able to get the work and support needed for them. Just to clarify that for anyone who is Black and has questions and concerns about that, or even anyone who's not, and, you know, because I find I'm constantly having to have these conversations with people, and it's like, why is it for Black people? There are white people and there's these people and whatever. And I understand that. I get that. But there's something different that Black people experience. And we've been trying to explain that to everyone else for the longest time. But still, we're here in this space, in this day and age, you know, after the big Black Lives Matter marches throughout the whole of the world, we're still having to have these conversations about race and racism and how it impacts our community. We cannot afford to allow that to get in the way of people in our community getting the support and assistance that they need. So I just thought I'd just stick up in there and make that be as clear as possible.
Yeah, sorry, Debbie, I just wanted to add on to that. In fact, the people that are in these services, the Sure Starts, the NHS, they actually come up to me and say, we're happy that you're doing this work for your community. And that hits home. Because when you're a mom, when you're pregnant and you access these services, you know, you just think, you know, my midwife is just going to look after me because that's her job. The school nurse is going to look after me because that's her job. But it's almost like they know indirectly that your community need to help you. And that sounds harsh to say that, but I've had three midwives, Caucasian midwives, say, good on you. We're glad that you have such a service for you know, young Black girls, because deep down, they probably know themselves. They probably know
and
themselves.
Yeah, from seeing it happen. And yeah. I find interesting with the works that we do is that people who are actually in the industry are supportive more so than the general Joe public, because they don't get it. Do you get what I'm saying? But obviously, people in the industry, they're doing the hands-on work, and they might see that perhaps with the workshops that they're doing, there's not as many Black and brown people attending them. Or when they do attend, they're not able to necessarily cater to their needs because they don't fully understand them. So, yeah, that's an interesting point. And I'm glad that you're getting the encouragement within the industry. Sorry, I did cut you. Did you want to finish what you were saying?
No.
Okay, cool. What as you know, with us in the community, I guess for parents of teen mums or family members of teen mums or people in the community that share space with teen mums, what are things that we can do to help support young mums and teen mums and teen parents?
I would always say it is a battle because the parents or those who are in the lives of a teen mother become highly stressed for different reasons. They get highly stressed because of, because it could be financial, because, you know, if you are 14, she cannot legally claim benefits. She cannot legally, the young mom cannot legally go to work. So sometimes you are finding the grandparents just highly stressed. Religion can play a big part as well. A lot of families in the church become highly stressed because of a shame indication, because, you know, the daughter may not be married. Of course she can't be married. She's 14. The government can put pressure on grandparents because after a while they may say her money, the grandma's money may be cut off. If the young mom is 16, she can then claim benefits. So that could affect the grandparents. That could cause a lot of stress and arguments as well. Space in the household, you know, you're here, we've already got enough people in this house. Now you come home with this baby. Being black can be just being a black person. The way we deal with things, we keep it all to ourselves. We don't deal with shame very well. So the grandparents can just become just overly stressed. But if the grandparents was able to be in contact with myself, I would liaise with the grandparents and say, first of all, it's okay. We will sort all of this out. We need to keep mom safe and we need to keep baby safe. How we can support a teen mother is, first and foremost, and this is what I say at the beginning of any workshop that I have, I always say to them, it doesn't matter what your age is, you are a mother. Teen mothers can feel less than a mother because the world keeps telling them they are a child. You're a child. You can't breastfeed. You're a child. You don't know how to make food for your baby because you're a child. You're almost looked at as a teen mother is just never really knowing what's good for your child by the world, even though you've always known it. And even for some teen mothers, if it's a delayed process, trust me, she's going to get there. Once you leave the hospital, it doesn't matter if it's 6 months, a year down the line, you will get there. But some teen mothers are probably delayed because society have just made it 10 times more difficult. So I just think it starts with ourselves. It starts with the community. We have to understand there is nothing about shame about a teen mother. She is a mother and you need to respect her. You need to respect her as if she was 31 having a first child. When you respect somebody, everything after that becomes easier. So because you respect her as a teen mother, you're now going to tell her there's a job opportunity when you go past the shop and, you know, you might keep her in mind. But because of the shame, because of the stigma, you see the job opportunity and you don't say anything at all because you're holding that. That's all inside. So first of all, we just have to start from one place, and that's let's start respecting mothers regardless of their age. Do something kind. There's so many acts of kindness. So going down to mother and baby units, your local mother and baby units, offering some support, volunteering support, whether this is mentally or physically, helping charities give food, helping charities give clothes, There are loads of baby banks up and down the UK. We can't say there isn't. There is. They have a website. If you just type in your local baby bank, it will be there. You can also help when you see a young mother and she's pushing her buggy. She may be looking overwhelmed. It's okay to stop her in the road. I'm not encouraging anyone to just go out their way and just stop in random people. Obviously, assess the situation, see if she's willing to receive, contact with you. But some we have known in recent times, teen mothers ending their life. Mm-hmm. They have taken their own life because they're not able to cope. But when you backtrack, you'll find that they did go out that day. They did go to the supermarket and stuff like that. And nobody kind of stopped them. No one kind of checked in and just, I remember the ambulance man, he says that every time he sees someone that's looking down, he asks them for the time. I know it sounds weird. He's like, why would you ask them? But that will snap somebody out of taking their own life. It's crazy, right? So just saying, is everything okay? Do you have the time? Do you have the time in your love? And that could be the difference between a young mom taking her life or even taking the baby's life. All of the things I'm mentioning are not money related. And all of the things I'm mentioning, we're doing every day. We are saying hello to our neighbors every day. We say hello to somebody in Tesco's every day. We don't know them, but it's friendly. It's respectful. It's something that we all do without knowing. So yeah, I think apart from the work that I'm doing, put yourself out there. It does make a difference. And for those of you that are professionals, play your role. If you are a social worker, you may be a social worker for adults, but I know in your training, you know how to offer mental wellbeing support. You know the charities that there are for a person to access money. Go forth with your knowledge. And don't ever think that you're not qualified to give advice. Sometimes you may look at a situation and think, she's a young mom. I'm a university lecturer. I don't have a clue about young moms. What can I do? I know what you can do. You can say to this young mom at 15, this is the eligibility to go into university. You may go there one day. She's 15. University is probably not even on the radar right now, but you've planted the seed. And young people of this world just need you to plant the seed. What happens to that seed after that is, it's up to the young person. But just anyone that you come into contact with, just think, with the tools I have, how can I help that person?
That's awesome. It's particularly with the what you said about the guy who works in ambulances, in terms of just asking someone the time. That's just so simple and so easy to do. And you don't know how far that conversation can go. I mean, it could get, cut short with the answer, but that person was really asked for help, which, breaks the ice a bit. I think I talk to people all the time anyway. I'm always finding something to talk to people about, but that is definitely a great way to perhaps engage and, just show up for someone in a very simple way. Thank you for that. I think I was trying to think about some of the stigmas and stereotypes that are attached to teen mums and young, teen parents. And I guess one of the things, as I'm looking at the age of what we're talking about teens, we're talking about people between the ages, as you said, between 12 and 21. And within that age, there is a bracket of ages where it's according to law, it's illegal to be having sex before a certain age. So I wonder how, I think about how that adds to the stigma and stereotypes, and what happens for that young person that has that attachment to them, particularly if they might have been with someone who's slightly older. How does that work for them? I think that's, I hope you get what I'm getting at in terms of that perspective.
Yeah.
What's your thought on that?
Yeah, so more times than none, grandparents may know in the end that the daughter has a baby by an older man. Most of the time, nothing will come out of that. Like, nothing will come out of that. He'll continue being a father, and nothing will come out of that. You will get some parents that will be like, no, we're going to go to the police and we're going to get this situation. But I've noticed if your daughter's just dating, mom and dad, the grandparents are more willing to, you know, we're going to go to the police. He shouldn't be dealing with you. You're a minor. This shouldn't be happening. But something quite bizarre happens when a woman is pregnant. I don't know if it's kind of like grandparents thinking we can't get so-and-so arrested because it's the father of our grandchild's, the father of our grandchild. I'm not quite sure. But more times than none, nothing will happen. The only time something will happen is if the young person, if the mother will probably go into the school or wherever she is and will say that she feels that she was sexually abused. But normally if it's a relationship and she feels happy, nothing will happen.
That's interesting.
I have my views on it. I think going back to our culture, I think there are a lot of black grandparents that just, it's a shame. Or why do we need people to know our business?
Mm.
If we're not saying anything, no one else can say anything.
Mm.
If Marcy is not saying anything, if you know, no one else can say anything. But I think it's a lot to do with the baby more than anything. I think once there's a baby, I think the grandparents just feel that we just need to sort this as a family. I don't think they dismiss it in their heart, no. I think there's a lot of grandparents that know you're a big man. You should never have been around my daughter. But in terms of continuity and just trying to make things work, that happens a lot more than going down the police route.
Okay.
I don't know if it's because it's our community. I don't know. I know this happens in the Asian community as well. I'm not too sure about other ethnicities, but I know with ours, it's a lot of the time the grandparents won't say anything.
That's interesting. I can see what you're saying, and I get it. It's just I just thought perhaps in some situations it might be a bit different, you know. Yeah, that's mind blowing, and so. I guess what I'm really trying to say, and I'm trying to be mindful and careful, obviously, as well, for all obvious reasons. but I think about the situations where young minds are being taken advantage of, and the abuse isn't necessarily one of, you know, abuse is abuse when you're taking advantage of any way of someone who's vulnerable. And in this case, it would be the age of which would be the vulnerability is their age, and an older person choosing to be with that person, and that younger person gives consent. Does that actually make it easier? No, not necessarily. To handle and deal with.
There are laws around this that if you are underage and you sleep with somebody, it's apparently it's still classed as rape.
Right.
And for anyone that's listening, you can Google it yourself. If you consent to sleep with someone that's older than you and you are a minor,
because I've heard situations where someone might be the girl might be, you know, 14 or 15 and the boy might be, no, the girl might be about 13 or 14, the boy might be 14 or 15, and just the fact that he's just that much older, he still might not be legally or consensual age, but he still can get into some trouble because he's had sex with an underage girl, which they're both vulnerable at that point as well. Do you see what I mean? So it's a tough and tricky situation oftentimes. And I do encourage parents of teen parents to get as much support as possible, you know, because I can't imagine the way that your mind has to navigate around that.
Yeah. So in my workshops, we go through the laws, and that's the one that we're speaking about now. If not so much if she's 13 and the boy's 14, that is a different law. But there is a law out there that if she's a minor, so she's under 16, he's over 16, even though she's consented, you know, according to the law, it is classed as rape. I hate to say the word rape, but it's apparently sexual abuse. What I do on my workshops is I make the teen mother come to the assumption herself. So when we look at the mental well-being module, there is a module where we talk about consent. There is a module where we talk about relationships and what healthy relationships should look like. But as we're going through the module, she'll start to think, you know, let's say his name's Daniel. She might think and lead up to, how did it even come about to even meeting Daniel? If you're 16, he's 21. What was happening in my life at the time for me to even meet Daniel? What was my, at each stage of me being in school and getting pregnant, where did my parents intervene before I got pregnant? And what you'll start to see, I mean, some of the mothers won't say anything, but at that point, it's like a light bulb switches on and she realizes I wasn't protected. I wasn't protected. That those people that should have protected me, the adults in my life, didn't protect me. Now, the grandparents will say, how could I protect her? She was climbing out the window. She never came home on time. You know, what could I have done? Physically, you may not have been able to do anything. You may not have been able to put the bolt on the door and stuff like that. But when you look at relationships and look at, did your daughter feel like she wanted to be at home? And if she didn't want to be at home, what was the reasons why? What was happening at the time to what made her want to just keep being outside? Was it because she wanted to follow friends, or you know, was there abuse going on in the household, so she just wanted to just stay away? You'll find that in most of the workshops, a light bulb will switch on, and they will, especially those that are having babies by older men, they'll realize, actually, I wasn't protected. We're not here to blame the grandparents, but in the eyes of the law, if you're a guardian, as far as the police are concerned, you are the legal guardian of the child. Whichever way you want to pull it, they'll still say you are responsible for this child, and any actions that come from this child, it's, you know, you still have that responsibility. And that's hard to hear, because as a mother, you know, well, their grandmothers, there's only so much that you can do. You know, there's only, you know, especially if your daughter runs out the house, there's only so much you can do. But as sad as it is, in the eyes of the law, the government would just say, look, you are still the legal guardian. And if she has ended up in the hands of a, you know, an older man, you may have tried your best. But I do hear a lot of women say, I wish my mom and dad did more.
Mm.
And I don't say anything at that point because I'm not here to judge. You're just on the program. But somewhere down the line, they end up saying, I wish my mom and dad did more.
Goodness. Thank you for sharing that. I think essentially that's what I was trying to get, but I didn't know how to get there. You got it. So thank you so much. Yeah, because, gosh, I'm saying yeah because like I have something to say, but that is a deep one, you know?
It's a catch-22 because as a mother myself, when you speak to the grandparents, they will say, well, what more could I have done? And it's true, you know, as a grandmother, if your daughter does leave the house, you can't chase her, you know, you can ask her to come home on time after school, but you can't wait outside the school and stuff like that.
Follow them everywhere they're going, and you can't see between perhaps the lies that they're telling you where they are from where they're not. Do you know what I mean? You have to give them the benefit of the doubt, hopefully, you know, and
Yeah,
go on, you was going to say something.
No, I was going to say motherhood is hard, but although the teen mothers were saying, I should have been protected, I still know that they are reflecting on their behaviour. And now that they're becoming mothers, you want to hear some of the things that they say. My daughter's not going to be in this situation. I'm going to make sure I do this and make sure I do that. And I smile and it's nice. But a part of me just say, I'm sure your mother said the same thing.
Mm.
So we have to give that grace. We have to do. I know in some people's cases, that's not the case, you know. But I always say to them, we'll have this conversation in, you know, when your child, baby becomes a teenager, we'll have this conversation. Yeah. But I just say to them, please, in your own time, give your mother the grace or give your father the grace. If you truly feel like you wasn't protected, find a way, whether it's through therapy or whatever it is, and just try and give them that grace that they tried. Because this journey of motherhood is not, it's not easy.
Well, and as much they may have tried it, some instances, parents have done the best that they could or can with what they know. You know, with the resources that they were given, and if they're not being given the resources to be prepared for handling parenthood that could prevent their child from going through a certain experience, then no one would be going through these things. Do you know what I mean? So. You were talking about the laws being different for an underage mum with an older over 16 partner. How is it different to both being underage in terms of the law?
I forgot where it was, but I think in France it's a whole different thing, but over here, I haven't looked too much into it. I am still looking into it. But I know that I know that if you are under 16 and you consent to somebody that's older, the law still says that, you know, you've been coerced because they believe that you're not, as a minor, you're not being able to make informed decisions. And the person that's older has taken advantage. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, yes, that's sexual abuse, it's called, you know, where they sex rape. With the two young people, even though they're minors, I'm still just looking into that law to get it correct. But I know some, I don't know if it's here or in France, I think one of the countries, you're allowed, it's actually allowed, like it's kind of not looked at as bad because they're both underage. And I think another country they're saying that it doesn't really matter if they're both underage, it's still like against the law. I'm still trying to look into it because it's a different law, because obviously here the consent is 16 because they're both under the ages of 16. It's a different type of law, but I am looking into that one. But the one I do know so far, which so many people are shocked about, is the other one where if she's underage and the person's older and she's consented, they don't like to accept that action. Did he rape me? It didn't feel like he'd raped me because I consented. But it's more the judges are looking at the psychological element more than the physical element. You as the female, you're just looking at the physical element, like he didn't force me, everything was fine. But the judge has passed that law from a psychological view that no, she was not able to make an informed decision when the act took place. And a lot of young women, you find they don't want to digest that because they don't want to, because we've kind of been conditioned that what rape is, you know, it's a very, you know, unfortunately a violent act and et cetera, et cetera. So when you say to them, actually, it can be this through consent, they're like, really? You know, but it's just the law. That's all.
Yeah.
We're not saying you feel that way, but the law does say that.
I remember that one point they were talking about potentially lowering the age of consent and what one point. What's your thoughts on that? Or if there has there been any new information on that decision?
Yeah, I heard about that. My concerns on that is if they lower the age in terms of how many cases will go through, go to court, will probably be less because now they've changed. You know, the laws change. But community wise, it's not always the best. It's not always the best because one of the reasons why I do the work that I do is because a lot of teen mothers, more times than none, not that you can't achieve your dreams, but a lot of them do say, if I just wait another 5 more years, if I just waited another 6 more years. So if they lower the age, this it's going to cause more pregnancies, and the stigma may change because now she can turn around and say, you know, what's the problem? You know, you can't penalize me now. So that's the only positive thing. at least they won't be looked at in that way if the law, if it's, you know, the law changes. But a lot of young mothers, they love their children. They would never do things differently. But they always just say, I just wish I had 3 more years, because becoming a teen mother, you have to grow up quickly. You are forced to grow up quickly. And I think, yes, if the law changes and the age gets lower, it shortens the time for her to do the things that she may want to do. Now, the teen mothers, a lot of teen mothers have gone on to be so successful. They have gone on to be lawyers, barristers, accountants, you name it. But what I always hear is them saying, I just wish I had 3 more years. I would have preferred to have done my degree child-free.
Mm.
You know, I love the job that I'm in, but I only chose this career because it wasn't possible for me to do it with a child. I finally just bought my first house, but I would have brought it earlier if I didn't have to make so much sacrifices. If they lower the age, what can we do? Well, if they do lower the age, my services are always going to be here. Because it goes back to mindset. If they lower the age to 14, for example, mentally she's still not as developed. Mm. So she's going to still need that support. And where the system's concerned is they make all these laws, but when things get nasty, they don't want to help.
Yeah.
You know, I know this is a different topic, but I come from a generation where we wasn't beaten. So the generation above me were the ones that was beaten. So imagine they made that law and says, you can't discipline your children anymore. A lot of us went into school and there was a lot of things going on in the school, you know, teachers being disrespected and all the rest of it. And in the end, you know, when crime happens, et cetera, the police will turn around and say, we don't like what's happening, this, that, and the other. And I'm like, but you guys made the law.
Mm.
You made the law not to discipline. This is the aftermath. The amount of men my age that are in prison right now is sickening. They have never had as many men in prison in decades than for my age group.
Mm.
And when you sit down and deep it and you think, you know, I'm not saying discipline is a good thing for everyone, but sometimes you have to think, that law was made. That law was made that you don't discipline your children. They then go out into the world and have no boundaries. It's, you know, there's just no boundaries. As a 5-year-old, there's no boundaries. As a 15-year-old, and now he's 25, and now he's really done something. You know, we're talking murder. You know, these are heavy crimes.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I get that kind of point. The only thing is, I think with this kind of thing is it's a catch 22, because there's this, to me, discipline means to educate.
Yeah.
And children need to have room to make mistakes and fall over to be able to learn and grow from them, right? To understand, because we can chastise our children for everything before they do it. For example, and that will only allow them to then be more explorative when they leave the home, because, you know, so much boundaries was put in place. There was no room for them to see that it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to try things and test things out safely. So I don't know. It really depends, because obviously there's the extreme side where people don't know their own strength. They're disciplined using so-called discipline as a means to as an outlet for their frustrations with their children not doing as they say. So I get it to some extent, but I think what we need to be able to do is, okay, physical punishment has been taken away from us as something we're no longer allowed to do, which really we shouldn't have really been allowed to do in the first place. Perhaps then find an alternative way, and that's I feel like that then becomes a thing of understanding, learning about ourselves as adults, understanding where our own frustrations, what triggers us, our traumas and our angers, so that therefore when we are parents and parenting, none of those things kind of get in the way of us disciplining our children. So I think it's, when I hear what you're saying, I hear you.
Yeah.
There's some mindsets that wouldn't fully understand, you know, the whole thing in its entirety. And I think it's important now, more so than ever before, for us to really, as parents, to get a grip on our own, like I said, traumas and triggers, because
absolutely
right now in this era, in this generation, they are pulling back our parental rights, I suppose.
Yeah.
And our children are being influenced by so much outside of the home, more so now than ever before, with the introduction of social media over the last 10 years, et cetera. So, you know, the important thing where discipline is concerned is maintaining that healthiness within ourselves and using that as a means, as a foundation to have a healthy connection relationship with our children so that we can have conversations and educate our children as a means of discipline to the other suggested means. But yeah, I thought I'd just drop that in there.
No, it is really true. It is really true. But in the context of them making laws and then they cry about it afterwards, my generation has the highest rate of prison sentences in decades.
But would you say that because of lack of physical discipline, or would that be a lack of human connection, parent-child connection? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. And that's the thing. I don't really know, but I just know that we wasn't disciplined. I just know that we wasn't. So sometimes I just think, when they're, you know, when they're doing so much, is it to do with that? Because I do hear people older than me say maybe they wanted to do something, but they thought twice because they knew about this thing. But I actually come from a generation where the law was the law. You know, my mum, I was never disciplined, and nobody in my class was disciplined. Nobody in my class was either.
I'm coming from that generation that was disciplined in that way.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't awarded that luxury, unfortunately.
Yeah, so I, and you know, it could be like what you're suggesting. It could just be the lack of, you know, that parent-child connection. But I just know what it was like being in school in the 2000s. I went to school in the 2000s and nobody in my class had been disciplined. In fact, we learned about discipline in history.
Gosh.
I remember being in a history class and they said, today we're going to talk about what used to happen to children, and they started talking about discipline.
That's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. I mean, it was a boring class. So it's just, I think it could be a number of things, but I just think that the government will make a law and then society has to clean up afterwards. Now, I'm not that much younger than you, Debbie, but I'm just. But sometimes those couple of years do change in terms of school anyway.
Yeah. And school, someone's 2 years above you, that they're way older than you. Do you know what I mean? But obviously now, out of school, 2 years makes no difference. So I get your point.
Yeah. And I just think if the law was to be lowered with the pregnancies, it doesn't change the mindset of the young mom. It just means that there's now a law, and like I said, at the most, it maybe the stigma might be less lower, but her mindset's not going to change. She's still a 14-year-old.
It's not helping the problem as. Goodness me. So that means that we've got a lot of work to do as parents.
Yeah, we have a lot of work to do, but going back to what I was saying before about the grace, I will never tell a young mom in my workshop, your mom and dad should have done this. I always say, and I hear them, they'll sit there and talk about the parents because that's what they do in the group. And I say, you must give grace. You've got to give grace. And I always just say, you know, trust me, how you're feeling, your parents are feeling even more, because guess what? You're their baby. You are their baby. They may not show you what they're feeling, but when your mother or your father goes to bed at night, they are scared. Because they're thinking, how is my daughter going to go out into the world? You know, is she going to be okay with postpartum? You know, how is she going to be with her first job? Is the man that she's had a baby by, is he going to step up and help? Is my daughter eventually in the future going to be able to go for that dream job that she wanted to go for? And then there's the other side, when they are the shame side, is they're thinking, what are we going to say when we go outside? The community is going to ask us questions. Have I failed as a mum? Have I failed as a dad? I'm in my late 30s or my early 40s and I'm a grandparent. What does it mean to be a grandparent? Because I'm only 41. So I let the girls understand it is tough, but understand that it's tough for everyone. It's tough for you as the mom, the mother. It's tough for your parents. It's tough for the father as well. I mean, my line of work is for the mothers, but in the future, I would like to work with the fathers, and it's very scary for the fathers. They're traumatized. When you watch a baby be born and you're 16 years old, it's traumatizing. So everybody feels it. And if I have to say another thing for the grandparents is don't always, I hate to say the word, kick your daughter out. We do find a lot of grandparents say she can't stay here. She just can't stay here. Social housing is a problem. It's very difficult to get a place these days. Families just need to try and, if mom cannot stay with you, find someone else in the family or a family friend. Social housing is very difficult. When we're seeing some of the problems happening, of the stigmas that I spoke about earlier, of not, you know, a young mother not working, you know, she's probably going to go on to have another baby again, she's probably going to end up in trouble, etc., etc. Sometimes it starts from social housing, because again, the government do place a certain quota young black mothers in some very deprived areas, and sometimes that's where it starts from. So if there are any grandmothers listening, I understand, obviously, if there's no space, there's no space. There's nothing you can do about that. But if your daughter can stay at home, please, you know, try and make use of the home. Especially in this climate, anyway. My mom says it was different in the 80s. Apparently, you could have a baby and you just get a house. We're talking about 2022, almost 2023. They will put your daughter in any place and they won't care. And if there's already a huge amount of privacy and there's a huge community of teen mothers, the area is quite high in crime and all the rest of it, they will place her there. They will place her there. I know there's a lot of grandparents, they don't really know. They don't really know the whole housing situation, but I'm telling you now, if you can hear or if you know any of grandparents that are going through this, the housing situation is very hard. And they are not going to put your daughter, if she's lucky, she might get a house in a very nice area, but 9 times out of 10, she wouldn't be getting a large 3-bedroom house in a very affluent area.
Yeah. it's crazy to think, and you think that something we need to, again, have conversations with our children about in terms of their future and the reality of how society works, you know, economically, the whole housing situation and all of that kind of real life skills and information. Do you know what I mean? That's something I feel like as parents we often bypass that section, and there's not like a book written on how to discuss this with your children. It's not discussed in schools. So yeah, and then when our children turn 18, 19 or 20 and choose to leave, out regardless of whether they have children or not, they're still not necessarily properly equipped, because I know I wasn't equipped for when it was time for me to leave home, the realities of paying bills and mortgages and all these kinds of things. There's no prep for that. I suppose in more affluent families, those conversations are probably perhaps had a bit more than it is in our communities, potentially. I don't know. If anyone out there wants to correct me, if I'm wrong, then please welcome any how can I say, corrections in the comments. I think what I was going to ask you, though, is do you have a message for Black British parents specifically?
My message to Black British parents is you already have the tools to be successful. We are divine beings. You are doing your best. Make sure that you question everything when raising your children. It's okay to be different. If all of your other mother friends or parent friends are doing a particular thing in the way they are, you know, probably teaching their children, home educating, or they're in school, to be vaccinated or not to be vaccinated, it's okay to think for yourself, because your children are yours. We sometimes may not feel like that, depending on where in the world you are. Most especially if you're in England, sometimes you don't always feel that you can make choices without being, penalized for it. But they are your children. My message is that there are more of us in the community that want to help. There is this notion that no one's around. That's not true. We are here. And the last thing I can say is, especially, I know this sounds biased because I work with teen mothers, I live, breathe, and stand by the work that I do. My passion for teen mothers is just like my passion for food. So everything I say is always going to be for the good of teen mothers. But please just understand that any teen mother could be your child, first and foremost. Don't ever think for one second that this can't happen to you, my daughter won't get pregnant, this, that, any of that. It can. But always just be gentle and be kind. Put the stigma to one side. You are not a better parent because you chose to wait to 35 to have your first child. You're no better than a teen mother. Learn from other parents. These teen mothers are trailblazing at the moment. These women are I don't know what was going on in the 80s, what my mother was talking about, but these teen mothers in 2022, they're not playing. They are making money, they are influencers, they are going on to apprenticeship degrees to become lawyers. They are a different breed of mothers. They are, the next time you're in the hospital and you see a doctor, she may not look like a teen mother, but she might be a teen mother. So just be careful when you're stigmatizing. Teen mothers on the other side, they are the future. They are young. They have so much youth in them. So we have to protect them. We have to nurture them, because they are actually the future. The youth are the future, actually. The youth are the future. So we must not break them down, but just to rise them up. And that's all I can say.
And that's plenty already. Thank you so much, Bianca, for joining us and sharing time and space. I appreciate all of the wisdom, experience, and knowledge that you shared with us in this episode. Please let our listeners know how they can get in touch with you and your organization.
So if you go on to Eventbrite, I normally post workshops on Eventbrite. If you just type in Bianca I do or one word advocacy, or you can email me at Johnson, that's JOHNSON dot Bianca BIANCA 78 at yahoo.com. I do have a website, but it's still being under construction at the moment. And that website will have newsletters. The newsletters will be every 3 months, and where we'll be talking about just events for teen mothers, and we'll be just talking about anything and anything really, breast cancer awareness and breastfeeding awareness, mental health awareness, all those type of things. We will be, speaking about just anyone that's helping teen mothers, so doulas, any teen mother who's done something extraordinary that we think should definitely be in the newsletter will be there. And whilst you have my details, just if there's anyone that has connections to local authorities, domestic abusive refuges, schools, universities, libraries, just feel free to spread the word, let them know what I am doing. Or even if you know of a teen mother who is, in need of some help, I'm always there. Just feel free to email me. And yeah, thank you. Thank you, Debbie.
No, thank you.
That's this week's episode of the Black British Parent Podcast. Be sure to go to blackbritishparent.co.uk to join the conversation. Thanks for listening. Until the next time.